Welcome to the Lending Forward podcast, brought to you by Atlantic Bay Mortgage Group. This is your home for real discussions about the mortgage and housing industry. Our hosts are here bringing you firsthand accounts every week from people at the heart of the business. And we're chatting with professionals from all corners of the industry as they help cultivate transparency around the future of the industry we love. Together, we are lending forward all we know to you. Thanks for joining us for today's episode. Let's dive in.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Lending Forward. I am Eliza Delgado here hosting you this week with our guest, Tim McBrayer, the 2024 incoming president of the Raleigh Regional Association of Realtors. And I'm so excited to have him with me. Tim, I would love for you to jump in and tell me a little bit about your history and your background. What drew you to real estate and ultimately what brought you to where you're at with the Raleigh Realtors?
Well, I am 71. I am married with two grown daughters. My wife and I have been married for 37 years, come this June 6th, D-Day. Good way to remember our anniversary. It's D-Day. I was in marketing and advertising, primarily television advertising, sales, management, and consulting for over 20 years, and was involved in print and radio for other years before getting into real estate. But when I bought my first home, living in Charlotte in 1981, I was just intrigued by the process of buying a home. And I was young in my career, and I thought, well, why don't I go to night school, earn my real estate license, and have that as a fallback if this career in television advertising sales doesn't work out like I hope. But obviously it did for many, many years afterwards, but I had that license. I still had the same license number that I was given after I took my exam and passed it in 1981, but I never chose to use it until 2006 when I decided to leave corporate America and decided that I wanted to do something where I could be kind of my own boss, more determiner of my future and how I wanted to work and live than working in corporate America, but also have a strong company behind me. And I happen to know the owner of my company, Coldwell Banker, Howard Perry and Walston in Raleigh. We've been friends since 1998, and I just never thought of working for anyone else. And as it happened, my next door neighbor, actually our houses back up to each other, or used to for 14 years, she was my broker in charge and was a friend before she ever became my broker in charge. So it was an easy transition once I made that decision. I joined the office in May of 2007, and it's been fun ever since, mostly fun ever since. Yeah. You have your bad days, no matter what you do. But I love doing what I do to help people buy and sell real estate. I love working with the people that I work with at the Jim Allen Group at Coldwell Banker HPW. I love working with all the realtors that I get to meet and help as a member of our board before running to be part of leadership and now as president.
Yeah. So talk to me about, first of all, I love that you did it as kind of like a background thing before you committed to it fully. I think that's so interesting and fascinating, especially now that you've progressed, like you said, to leadership at Raleigh Regional Association. So tell me about like kind of your progression into the leadership ranks and what has that looked like for you? Because I know this is obviously the 100th year anniversary of Raleigh Realtors Association. So it's a pinnacle year for you guys too. So it's cool to kind of hear the progression. So I'd love to hear more about it. Yeah, I'd love to hear more about that.
Well, in 2012, I was asked to join the what was then called the Government Affairs Committee at RAR, as we call it. And we meet every month or almost every month, and we discuss things having to do with public affairs at the time, government affairs at that time. And we still invite government leaders and other people that are involved in various departments of government to come in and talk about everything from water supply to sewer issues to, you know, you name it, road and transportation issues. We've invited city councilmen, commissioners, all kinds of public officials to come in and give us more information so that we can be more educated about things that are going to be important or may be important to our clients that we're helping. And so in 2012, after I started getting involved in the Government Affairs Committee, I decided to run for the board of directors of RAR. I wasn't successful the first two times, which is proof that you should never give up. If you want to go after something, keep trying. But third time I was elected, and then I was reelected twice. So I served 6 years. During that time, I was also elected president of what was then called the Realtor Foundation of Wake County, now called the Realtor Giving Network, or RGN for short. And I served as president in 2018 and did that. And then from there, I chose to run for leadership. I ran for secretary treasurer. Again, I lost the first two times and I won the third. And then I was elected with no opposition. I ran, just my name was on the ballot, so to speak, to run for president-elect. And I served in that position last year. And then I automatically became president this year. And it's kind of ironic that had I won one of the earlier elections that I lost, I would never have been the 100th president of Raleigh Regional. So I guess everything kind of worked out. It's fun to be the 100th.
Yeah, it all works out for a reason. Yeah. So I'm really excited for you because I think, you know, doing something like this incredibly in the 100th year, pinnacle for you, pinnacle for the organization. I'm sure it's a banner year for everybody. So I know we have talked before a little bit about your goals as president. So I would love to hear, you know, every association, you know, we've talked about this, you know, has a different dynamic. They're like a living, breathing organism, a reflection of the membership. So I'd love to hear, you know, and every market is so different. And Raleigh certainly has really kind of blossomed into this massive, you know, attractive city and a market that people really gravitate towards just because it's so entrepreneur friendly, tech friendly. And for so many reasons, people just long to be here. So tell me a little bit about, you know, kind of what your goals are for the association this year and how that kind of aligns with, you know, what the mission is to serve the greater Raleigh region. I'd love to hear more about that, too.
Okay. For the last several years, the president has come up with a theme for their year. And so I chose to make my theme for this year to be delivering exceptional member ROI. And in my inaugural speech that was back on January the 12th, I stress seven words that begin with the letter I, starting with inclusion. And some of the other words were innovation, integrity, information, investment, inspiration, and finally, involvement. And so I have stressed to all of our committee chairs and vice chairs, to our board of directors, to all the members that I have an opportunity to meet with, and will continue to do so throughout the year, the importance of making sure that we do our very best as an association to deliver exceptional return on investment. We want our members in what could be another tough year, although I don't think it'll be as tough as it was last year for most members, but to understand that we want, as an association, as leaders of this association of over 10,000 members, to deliver value to them, to deliver educational value, professional development value, networking value, all kinds of different ways that we can allow, at least provide opportunities for our members, if they choose to take advantage of them, to become better realtors so they can better serve not only their clients, but better serve the communities that they live in. Getting involved in the community is why we formed the Realtor Giving Network, or the Realtor Foundation of Wake County, now known as RGN. It was so that we as an organization could give back to the community in a bigger way than we can do so individually as single realtors. And so we want to continue to get as many of our members involved, to show them that we have a big tent and we want everyone who chooses to get involved to feel welcomed and to come here and try to figure out how they can get involved. I was at a kind of a welcoming session for our DEI committee, which is diversity, equity, and inclusion. And it's one of our key pillars as an organization, part of our strategic plan, to make sure that we are involving and welcoming as many of our members into the fold so that they feel welcome, so that they want to get involved, so they want to take advantage of everything the association has to offer, and so that we can educate more of our members about how we need to treat each other more fairly, with more respect, how there's no room for not doing business and not treating one fairly and openly just because they look different than us, believe different than us, live different than us. We want to abide by the Realtor Code of Ethics, and that includes treating people the way we want our members to treat each other and the way we want them to treat their clients and to treat anyone that we're dealing with when it comes to the real estate industry here in the Triangle area.
Yeah. So I know we also talked about this in terms of, you know, building out kind of more engagement with the membership, and that looks like not expecting it. This is one thing that I actually really loved, because, you know, I'm a part of so many different realtor associations. And so it's always really nice to kind of see the different approaches, right? And I love that you were talking about not expecting the membership to just come to the Cary office and come to your meetings, but creating an opportunity for you to go where they are, especially in the further reaches of your region. And I love that kind of priority on the engagement of maybe touching the fringes of your realtors and making sure they're equipped with the opportunities that people more in the metropolitan area have access to. So I'm really excited to see what you guys do with that. And another thing that you talked about during one of our conversations was really prioritizing the opportunity for the membership to get to know the staff of the association. Mm-hmm. So tell me a little bit about why that's important to you and what you ultimately aim to see with that, because the staff, they will stay there despite who's elected. So they're kind of the engine that makes things operate. So tell me a little bit more about why that's an important feature for you and your presidency this year.
Well, because I've been involved since 2012, as a member with mm-hmm. the organization, and have been here quite often. Sometimes I think they ought to just put a cot in the back room for me, because I'm there as often as I am. And leaders tend to be there a lot. You're dealing with different members of the staff. Today I was there for that DEI meeting, but then I had a meeting with the marketing director. I had a meeting with another executive there, and I had a meeting with our CEO, and I had a meeting with the person that runs our foundation. So there are a lot of times that I'll be there for several hours just going from meeting to meeting to meeting with the staff to be updated on things that those particular staff members are doing on behalf of the association, or to discuss new ideas I may have as president. And I want to see what their take is on what I would like to do to improve the association and give more back to our members. I believe the staff is the foundation of anything that we do, because without them, we couldn't do the things that we do. That's why we have a staff liaison for every committee here, so that they can be involved from the staff viewpoint to help the committee achieve what they want to achieve the things that are on our strategic plan that each committee, in some cases, they fall into several different parts of our strategic plan. The things that they do are involved with several different elements of our strategic plan. And so that staff liaison is there to assist. We want our members to know our staff better, because we want them to feel more comfortable dealing with our staff. I started just this past month, or actually still January, isn't it? I started earlier this month with our January board meeting, where Dave Phillips, our CEO, is going to ask either one or two of our staff members to stand up and give some information about themselves. Where did they work before they came to work for our association? More about their background. Yeah. What do they do at the association? How can they help our members, especially the leadership, the directors, and our leadership team that are here taking extra time to help our other members? I mean, none of us are getting paid. I mean, none of the volunteers are getting paid. And so, you know, we're
the labor of love.
Yeah. I mean, you know, increase my salary by 1,000%. I'm still being paid zero. So, you know, we're here because we want to give back to our association, to its 10,000 plus members. We want to make it better, and we can have different disagreements on how we make it better and what we do to achieve our goals, but that's okay. I mean, it would be boring if the entire world was made up of people that all had the same opinion about everything. So we want to get different opinions. Yeah. We want to invite people to come and get involved in the association who have never been involved before. And this year, when we had the applications to come in for joining different committees, we had 55 people who had never before applied to be part of a committee or on a committee.
Yeah.
And we made room for every one of them to be on a committee. And we gave them a first, second, and third choice. And 75% of the people who asked for a certain committee as their first choice got their first choice. And so we feel very good that we're on the right road to showcasing the ways in which our members can get involved and encouraging them to get involved. And now we're seeing the results of that. And we've created more task force. That's another way for people who maybe did not get selected, or they didn't apply in time to be selected to be on a committee. That's another way that they can get involved with the association. We have a task force having to do with sustainability that's been formed. We have a task force that has been formed to figure out new ways to raise revenue for our association. we live in a world where it costs money to run an association, just like it costs money to run a business. And even though we're nonprofit, right. we have to be run in many respects like a business. We have a budget. We try yeah. to adhere to that budget. We have expenses. We have revenue. And our goal is to use that revenue in the best possible way to give as much value back to our members. So all of that ultimately is involved with our members. The more members we can get to come to the association and do things to help our members as a volunteer, the more we're going to tell other people about our association, the more other people want to get involved, the more valuable our association will be to all of our members going forward. Yeah. That's what we're trying to deliver.
I know. Yeah. Well, I know you just mentioned this, and I think it's an important note. You know, every association, like we've talked about, is, you know, vastly different in terms of the number of people that are members and that kind of thing. And to talk about an association that has over 10,000 members, how big is your staff to support that much of a membership?
19 staff plus the CEO.
Yeah, that's pretty incredible to manage that many people. And I'm certain, you know, that is a huge workload. I know I've worked with a number of the teammates there. And it's always interesting to kind of see how they keep all the plates spinning in one direction or at the same time. It's a juggling act for sure.
Yeah.
So one of the other things I want to talk to you about, and there's a laundry list, so I'm sure we could make this, you know, an hour long, but actually there's two things I want to talk to you about. First is, you know, the Raleigh market in general. You know, I think a lot of people, when they see like the top markets that are ranked nationally to move to, Raleigh is always among the top 10.
Yes.
And I hinted at this earlier, just because it's central in the state of North Carolina. So you're equal distance to the mountains, to the beach, right in the middle of the state. And then the other thing is Raleigh has actually got some really great laws and, you know, legislation in place to really support entrepreneurship and business mm-hmm. development and those kinds of opportunities. You know, we've mentioned earlier, it's becoming or has become a tech hub. So there's a lot of organizations that have moved there. So with all the, you know, massive, you know, kind of influx of people, I was at this event with the chamber, you know, probably end of last year, and they were talking about in the next 10 years, the average population of Raleigh will be over 55, which is fascinating to think about when it's so tech friendly, so entrepreneur friendly, and there's
that's
so many schools in the area.
When you're 71, yeah. that's young.
Yeah, it is young. It is young. You're right. But just thinking about the diverse age groups that are moving there and that live there and reside there and work there. And the other facet is, you know, there's so many remote workers that have made Raleigh home because it's got an airport. It's got access to everything.
Yep.
So those are all factors that are, you know, obviously driving the demand for housing. And I know you and I even walked through an exercise of pulling the average home value and how many people are waiting. So talk to me a little bit about how you help realtors through your education, or what different ways can help realtors with, you know, sourcing, you know, those innovative ways for helping buyers get into their homes or helping, you know, sellers sell their homes in a market that has such demand. What does that look like?
Well, I think all the companies out there that are dealing with real estate are trying to educate their realtor, not employees, we're all independent contractors, but the people that work with them. We are trying as an association, as they are, to help our members get back to the basics of providing that quality service and looking at ways that you can market yourself, that you can reach out and try to generate business. You know, door knocking goes back a long, long ways ago when realtors would go door to door, and they still do, and sending postcards. I mean, yep. there's no single right way to go after new business as a realtor. You have to decide, what do you want to do? What works for you? You have to give it a fair shot at, so you can really understand whether or not it's working for you. You can't send out one postcard and expect to judge whether or not it was successful, or spend yep. an hour on the phone each day and figure whether or not that's successful. You have to do what you have the time to do, what you're willing to commit the time to do, and what ultimately works and fits within your budget. A new realtor is typically going to have less money to spend on marketing than someone who's in the business for 10 years. All of that takes yeah. time. You know, one of the things you have to teach young people, and it's not just young in age, but people that are young to the business, is that it does yeah. take time to build up a clientele. Like many people who have been in the business as long as I have, and this is my 17th year, you build up a core group of people that have done business with you multiple times over the years. You've helped them. You've helped them with their first home. You've helped them buy investment properties. You've helped their sons and daughters, their mothers and fathers, their brothers and sisters, friends from church and their work. I mean, you just get a lot of referral business when you've been in the business longer and longer, but it doesn't happen in your first year. So you have to be patient. You have to plan wisely. You don't want to overspend and put yourself in the hole. You need to set aside money for paying taxes. You need to set aside money for paying future realtor dues and things like that. So you just have to have a good education on how to properly plan. And both companies and their sessions, classes that realtors can take, regardless of who they're with, about how to do a business plan, about how to look at the different ways of marketing. And we get through Inman and other resources, we have so many ways as realtors that we can learn more about how to better manage our business, because we have a business as a realtor. Yeah. And so as an association, we try to offer classes and we try to offer ways that people can network and can learn more ways that they can do business. And it's an ongoing role of ours to try to provide as many opportunities as we can to our members to learn how to be more successful as a realtor. And we're not trying to replace what our companies do. They're contractors, they're realtors, you know, are members of our association, but we work together. We offer so many opportunities. We encourage people to earn designations, whether it's the Certified International Specialist, Property Specialist, CIPS, or it's CRS, Certified Residential Specialist. I mean, I could go down a long list of designations and certifications you can earn, but all of those along the way, as you earn them, teach you how to be better at what you do as a realtor and opens the door for you to have more opportunities to reach more potential customers. So whether or not you want to specialize with luxury homes, you want to specialize with seniors, you want to specialize in investment properties, there are classes, there are ways that you can learn more about those particular parts of the real estate business, the residential real estate business. And
You know what I love about Raleigh? What I love about Raleigh specifically is that market, there's plenty of room for each of those specialties to really thrive because there's so many diverse pieces of the population that need those kinds of support services from realtors with those designations and with that training. So I love that, you know, those are resources that are out there and they're just opportunities for people to specialize in something and help them set themselves apart.
And to your point, if I may, to your point about it being such a strong market, it is a strong market, one of the strongest in the country. We are a destination market for people who are retiring, for people who want to start a new business, for people who want to move here without jobs, knowing or at least feeling confident that they will get a job in their chosen field and make more money than they were making where they left, where they were living. And so people have that faith in this community because there are so many opportunities. You know, Apple's going to employ 3,000 people. Not all of those people are going to come from the Raleigh area. Some are going to move here from out of town. We have people moving here to go to work for other companies that are here and new companies that are being created here. If you take the Triangle Business Journal, for example, you see every single issue, a list of companies that are getting a business license because that's part of the public record. And so they show who's opening up an office or starting a new company. It's amazing how many companies are coming here, how many companies are expanding their operations. That means you're going to have to employ people and those people are going to need homes. And it is difficult right now because we have more demand than we have supply. And we've had that problem like many markets do around the country for a few years now. But I think it's going to get better in one respect if interest rates go down this year, as we think they will. That's going to,
fingers crossed.
Yeah, fingers crossed. That's going to mean more people who have been on the sidelines will get into the market as buyers. If prices continue to go up, which they are bound to if we have less supply than we do demand, less supply than demand, then that means prices are probably going to continue to appreciate. So if you're a seller and it makes sense for you to sell, you're going to make money. You're going to make a profit. And if you've owned your home for a while, you're going to make a lot of profit because it's amazing how much the properties in this market have gone up over the last few years. But not everyone wants to sell right now. Not everyone feels they can sell because they got a 3% interest rate and they don't want to go buy something else where they will get a 6% interest rate. But every situation is different.
That's right. That's right. And there is plenty of room for everybody to a degree. And I think you're right. You know, like all the tea leaves are saying, you know, hopefully with mortgage rates moving in the right direction, that'll increase the opportunity for more buyers. And hopefully that'll motivate sellers that want to cash out some of their equity and maybe move up or relocate or move down or whatever that looks like for them. So that is the nature of, you know, everybody being in a very unique position for themselves and what their goals are. And that really is kind of the best of having realtors that are certified and that know what they're doing and that are, you know, negotiating on their client's behalf, because that's the magic of having a realtor working for you.
I think if there's any problem that we have as much as anything is we are such a great place to live that no one wants to leave unless they have to. If they don't want to live where they're living.
What a problem. What a problem to have.
Yeah, it is. It is a great problem to have.
I'm going to go off script for a second because talking about realtors and their expertise, and I know, you know, last week I was there when you guys had the NAR discussion about the litigation that's happening. Can you give me a little, you know, insight as to what the current kind of position is? You know, we talked a little bit, you know, John Wood, who is the NAR representative, one of them, you know, mentioned that North Carolina is somewhat of a different state because, you know, commissions are a different conversation here, protected to some degree. Do you have any insight that you would like to share on that perspective? Because I think there's value in kind of the current position of how it stands in the state of North Carolina, at least.
Well, what I'm going to tell you is only the opinion of Tim McBrayer. I'm not speaking on behalf of the association or NAR or NC Realtors or anybody else other than me. But I do think that we are more protected than a lot of other states because we have had an exclusive buyer agency agreement for many years. And so we understand buyer agency and we have had opportunities for years to educate our buyer clients on the importance of having a buyer agency agreement with a professional realtor who is there to help them along the process so that they end up having a successful transaction and they purchase a home that they can afford and that is right for them and their families. And we've had a listing agreement for many years that says in the listing agreement that we will be paying as part of our listing commission, a commission to the firms of the buyer agent who is representing the buyer or buyers. And so to the extent that we've alerted, we've educated our market for years as to how we conduct business. And so I don't really think there's ever been any secret. I mean, we pay the realtor who's representing the buyer from the commission we get as the listing agent. The buyer knows or buyers know that the buyer agent representing them is going to be paid through the listing agent's commission or his or her firm's commission, unless you own the firm. And so we, I think, as realtors in general, just need to do a better job of educating our clients on the value of realtors in general, and especially the value of what buyer agents do and the need for having buyer agents, because I think it's the best way to protect buyers from being taken for a ride, from not having the best opportunity to get a home that they get fairly and that they're in the know all the way through. There are no surprises. There are no secrets. They know exactly what's happening.
Yep.
And when you have all the information, you can make more informed decisions. And we should always be in favor of making sure that our clients are well informed. And that's why I think that from what I've heard that we're in a better position. But I mean, anyone can sue anybody in this world. So who knows? I mean, there's just no way to predict. If I had a crystal ball, I would not be selling real estate. I would be in Las Vegas making a lot of bets. So
that's right.
Or I would have been retired.
Well, I just think it's one of those things that's, I just think it's one of those things that, you know, you hear the news has, you know, a prolific history of, you know, making a headline out of anything. And I just think, you know, for the average listener or maybe even a realtor that might not have the resources of a very robust association that supports them, and I'm not denigrating any associations, but maybe they just haven't, you know, kind of had the conversation for their region yet. The NAR lawsuit seems kind of like an enigma that's kind of out there in the ether somewhere. So it's always interesting to have another voice or another take on it. And I just thought the meeting that RRAR put on last week for the membership was actually super insightful. And it helps to have a closing attorney or an attorney that works exclusively in real estate to be able to explain all the different pieces. I thought it was fascinating just explaining from the Missouri MLS case, you know, that it took 3 years to even get to any kind of civil trial. So this national case that's happening is going to potentially take even longer than that. So there's really no change until there's a legal change. I just think that having that confidence. Yeah, go ahead.
I do know that NAR, from what they've said, is very confident that the suits that had been brought so far have no merit, and that they will be reversed or somehow modified to reflect reality and to reflect what is really happening. You're right. I have a news background in that my first degree from the University of Georgia was in journalism, and I've won awards for journalism as a student. And I know that, you know, like they say, you know, the stories that you see in the news are typically bad news, not great news. Mm-hmm. I mean, for most people, great news is kind of boring. I mean, people want to hear about the fire and the robbery and all that kind of stuff. And that applies to everything in life. I mean, unfortunately, too often the news media report inaccurately and try to make things much bigger than they really are, and try to paint a doom and gloom picture quite often when things aren't quite as doom and gloom. And so I'm confident that in the end, common sense and logic will rule the day, and that these suits will be either thrown out or just changed to where there's not as much damage to our clients, because ultimately it's damage to our clients that we're talking about. We need to have buyer agency, and we need to be able to have people that are focused solely on the needs of the buyers. They represent the buyers. The listing agent represents the sellers.
That's right.
And both parties are protected, and that's what you want. You don't want a one-sided transaction where somebody is cheated while someone else benefits or is hurt while someone else benefits. You want them to reach an agreement so that the seller is happy with what they sold it for, and the buyer is happy with what they bought it for. And that's what you ultimately want.
Yeah. Well, I think that's it's a fascinating topic, and I think there's obviously going to be more to come over that. But I think it's top of mind for everybody right now. So I appreciate you giving me, even if it's Tim McBrayer's, very valid insight, not speaking on behalf of any organization, just Tim McBrayer as a professional. I appreciate
it. On behalf of anybody else.
Yep, that's right. I just wanted to hear your take on it. So, and also I wanted to thank you for putting on that workshop last week. I thought that was very beneficial for the membership. So, talking about good news, I know we've, you know, also mentioned this before. One of the, you know, incredible elements of Raleigh Realtors is the Realtor Given Network, and, you know, the work that you guys do just in the community. And I think it cannot be emphasized enough the importance of realtor associations, the communities that they're based in, and actually how much good they do for their communities. It's not just a association for the membership. It's an association for the community, and there's ultimately an impact that comes from it. So tell me about the Realtor Giving Network. I know you have some really incredible numbers in terms of, you know, how much you've raised to start with and where you ended up last year. So tell me a little bit about the goal of Realtor Giving Network, what you guys do, and a little bit of the numbers behind it.
Well, we do many things at the Realtor Giving Network, but they're all meant to serve our community and those that need help. So, for example, in the summer, we buy dozens of air conditioners, and working with Wake County, we learn about people who have need for an air conditioner. Maybe they don't have one at all. Maybe they had a window unit and it broke and they can't afford to get a new one. Whatever arm of these governments, in most cases it's Wake County, it could be others, we learn about these individuals. The call goes out, an email goes out to all of our members to say, can you help deliver this air conditioning unit to this family at this address? And whoever replies first is the person who gets to go and get the air conditioner at our headquarters in Cary and go deliver the air conditioner. And I've been fortunate enough to be the first person on several occasions. And that's just one of the things that we do. We're in the process right now of putting together some a package of goodies, if you will, to take to a nonprofit on the day before Valentine's. It's kind of tied into Valentine's Day. And we are asking our members to text to a certain number and make a $25 donation so that we can do 100 of these packets, again, tied to our 100th anniversary. And we're going to do four special campaigns this year, once a quarter. Each one is supporting a different nonprofit. Each one is going to be 100 things. Whatever we do, we're going to do 100 of them. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the ways that we give back to our community. Another way that we've been doing volunteer work for years is we do what we call apartment makeovers or home makeovers, working with nonprofits like Family Promise, Families Together, CASA. These are nonprofits that own buildings or own houses, and they make them available to families who maybe have been living on the street or live in shelters. Maybe mom and the kids are in one place and dad's in another. They just can't afford to pay for even temporary housing until they could get on their feet and get more permanent housing. And so they go through a selection process, a vetting process by the different nonprofits that work with other nonprofits to find out who these people are. And then they come to us and say, okay, we have this apartment or this home that needs a makeover. Can you pull together some people and can you raise money to do this? Because you have to pay for the furnishings and the moving of the furnishings. And then you actually have to have the volunteers to go in and do the furnishing. And so various companies and individuals, mine included, have for years raised, used to be $1,500. The last few years, it's been $2,000. And that money goes toward, again, buying those supplies, paying for the moving company, and also some of it does go back to the giving network so that we can do other good work in the community. And then the date is selected, and we'll go out with 5 to 10 or 15 of our volunteers from different companies and go about putting in light bulbs, hanging pictures on the wall, in some cases putting up blinds, making beds, putting beds together, arranging furniture, putting up light bulbs, cleaning out kitchens and everything that's involved.
All the things.
And making
everything.
That place livable for the family. And they could be there 2 weeks or they could be there 6 months or they could be there longer than 6 months, depending upon the place and the nonprofit that we're working with. But those are just some of the ways that we do things. We take a crowd every year to the food bank and we pick potatoes that have been donated by farms. We go through a lot of rotten potatoes before we get a good potato, but we collect bags of potatoes, and then those are, again, given out by other nonprofits, churches and other nonprofits, to people who can use that to make soup or other meals that they can make with potatoes. We also do what we call backpack buddies, where we work with some different organizations that are helping kids that are going into foster care. And so we put together backpacks where there are reading books and pens and paper and different things that they can take with them because a lot of them don't have anything when they go to foster care. They basically have the clothes that are on their back. And so we will do 50 to 100 of these backpacks. We come to our headquarters in Cary and the materials there. Now, our job is to put everything together and then package it up so that they can be delivered. So, again, just another example of how our giving network brings together members, and some of our staff participate too, and we put together these packages, and we go out into the field and help various nonprofits help people in need. So it's very rewarding, and we
I bet.
Always try to do as much as we can.
So I know just for, you know, obviously that is not even kind of touching the tip of the iceberg, because I know there's even so much more that goes behind all of that work. And I know you and I had also talked about how much you raised in 2007 being, you know, $85,000. How much did you guys raise in 2023?
Well, in 2018, when I was president, not 2007, it was 85,000.
Oh, sorry.
And yeah. In 2023, we raised over $310,000.
So, yeah, which is incredible.
It is.
So talk to me about the grants too, because that's also an element of what you do for the community as well. That, and that's just not, that's not related to anything specific. It's really just kind of need based, right?
Yes. What we decided to do a few years ago is to make available to other nonprofits a process by which they could apply for a grant. That grant could be $2,500. It could be $25,000, $30,000. It depends upon the need. Yeah. And depends upon how much money we have already given out throughout the year, what we have at the end of the year. But for example, this past year, we gave two $25,000 grants to nonprofits. One nonprofit works with both men and women who have had substance abuse problems. They come and live in these houses. They have to have a job. They have to be drug free. But it's a way for them, again, to get on their feet and ultimately have a place of their own. And then the other nonprofit that we worked with is a nonprofit that provides a place for people who have been living on the street and still live on the street to come and get a shower, get food. There are people there from different government agencies that can help them if they have a particular problem. There could be someone on Social Security or someone that qualifies for Medicare, and they don't know how to do the paperwork involved with that. Or there's some other service, government service that they might qualify for. They just don't know how to see if they're qualified. And if they are, how to get qualified so that they can get these government services. So we're very selective. We have many more grant requests than we have money to give out grants. But we hope that's always the case in the sense that we hope to always have people there that, that need help. On the flip side, we wish there weren't any needs because we'd be happy to go out of business as a foundation if everyone had everything they needed and everyone was fine, but that's the world.
You know, I love though that you just described of all the facets of all the elements that you guys are engaged in through the Realtor Giving Network. It just kind of emphasizes the key point to me, which is how generous realtors are, both with their time as well as their own financial resources to, you know, to give back in so many ways so that the community can benefit from that too. So I love that so much. And I can't support that enough. So thank you for kind of walking through all of that. And I hope, you know, the people that are listening are inspired. If they don't have something like that in their associations, to start something, because it's never too small to start and it can grow very quickly.
And so if they're a member of REAR, then, call us up, visit our website and see how you can get involved.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Tim, now that our time is kind of winding down together, I have one last question for you. Well, technically two. The first one being, at the end of your presidential year, the 100th year of RRAR, if you were looking back, once you hand over the baton and you said, how good did I do? A+. What would you consider kind of a win for your presidency if you're looking back?
Well, it would be multifaceted, first of all.
Okay.
Part of the win would be that we finished the year in the black as an association. Never liked being in the red.
Yeah, that's a good goal.
Financially, I want to be in the black. And right now we are, and things are looking good, but you never know what the rest of the year is going to bring. So
that's
just
right.
Hope we finish the year having more money than we need to spend or budgeted to spend.
Yep.
Number two, I hope that our membership continues to grow. We projected that we would have fewer members because of the economy than we had last year. But right now we are ahead of where we thought we would be as of the end of January. So that's a good
sign.
Awesome. And hopefully that trend will continue. Yeah. Third, that we have more people than ever before involved in the various ways you can get involved at RRAR, whether that's the Giving Network or it's on the task forces or continuing to work on the committees that, that you've been selected for. Helping all the committees achieve great things, achieve things that are tied to our strategic plan so that we are meeting our goals as an organization. Next one would be to make sure that we raise as much money for the Giving Network as we possibly can so that we can help many more people. Because in spite of how strong this community is, I'm talking about the greater Raleigh community, we still have many people in need and we need I think we have a moral obligation to help people in need. And I think that we should wherever we can. And the Giving Network is a great way to do it as far as our association and our members. I mean, we all give, I won't say all, but most of us give to other organizations, whether it's through our church or the Red Cross or the American Cancer Society, whatever, however we give, there's always going to be room to give more if we can't afford to do so, because the need is always there. And so we hope that our members will see donating to the Giving Network as a way to do that. The final thing, I guess, would be that we want, well, not the final, the next to final thing is that we want to raise as much money as we can for our Realtor Political Action Committee. We call that RPAC because that's very important to protect private property rights. There's no other organization that's out there speaking on behalf of property owners. It's only the National Association of Realtors and locally, RAR. And we want to be able to elect public officials who are going to be advocates for what we feel as realtors are important to protect private property rights and to protect our ability to help our clients buy and sell properties. And then finally, I hope that by the end of the year, we have truly created a better atmosphere at our association where every single person there, whether you're staff or you're a volunteer, we're all focusing on delivering that exceptional ROI to our members, and that we have done so, that we can feel confident that when we look back on everything we did this year, that we delivered that exceptional value to our members. That ROI, what better way to serve our members than to get the most out of the money that they invest as to be a member in our association? And that's what I want us to
do. Absolutely. Awesome. Well, Tim, I want to say thank you so much for joining me today.
Welcome.
And this is obviously a great conversation for me. And like I said, I could do this all day long and keep picking your brain, but we'll wrap it up here. So excited to have you celebrating your 100th year. I can't wait to work together with you and kind of see what we do together. And thanks again for joining.
Likewise, I appreciate the time you've taken. It's been a pleasure.
Absolutely.
And I hope that there'll be great things happening this year for all of us.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thanks again for tuning into today's episode of the Lending Forward podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our channel, follow us on Instagram at Lending Forward, on YouTube and LinkedIn. Tune in next week for another new episode and go lend something forward today. Atlantic Bay Mortgage Group, LLC, NMLS number 72043, NMLSconsumerAccess.org is an equal opportunity lender and employer. Located at 600 Lynn Haven Parkway, Suite 100, Virginia Beach, Virginia 23452.